Lee, Reel 3. What did the patrols involve?
Well, we always worked to the east, so to speak, towards Ostend. We usually went along fairly reasonable distance off the coast. I mean, obviously, no U-boat's going to be right on the beach. And we went out there, and then we went out to sea a bit and came back again, perhaps 50 miles or so further out. That was the sort of general lay of it. We varied it a bit. A
couple of hours, this would be. A
couple of hours, yeah. Yes, I should think so. I can't really remember now.
What kind of armament did you have for dealing with?
Well, we had usually had those big 4-gallon petrol tins with a top cut off, and a couple of and 4 16-pound bombs in that tail with the fins uppermost, so to speak.
And attached to the side of the aircraft, were they?
No, in the aircraft.
Oh, yes.
And then the observer picked a 16-pound out, pulled the pin out of it, and dropped it over the side. Quite simple. And
Can I ask you what experience you'd had of bombing?
None. Absolutely none.
Do you feel, with the wisdom of hindsight, that a training would have increased the efficiency of your operations?
Well, I don't know that it would, because nobody knew anything about it. This is way back in 1915. I don't think so. I think we had to learn. No, I don't think it would.
Did you actually drop any bombs in anger during these 3 months?
No,
you
I didn't. No.
And did you actually see any subs?
No.
So it was rather a quiet
night.
No, life.
Very quiet. It's a typical sort of... You see, that's the trouble with this anti-U-boat racket. You can do tremendous outreach and see absolutely nothing. And then some people seem to have all the luck, and by heavens above, you get one or two people who see two or three, or perhaps more, in a comparatively short time. These sort of lucky ones.
Did the aircraft have any other equipment to assist you in your...
You had a Remington rifle, in case anybody turned up. It was another aircraft. You got some hope of hitting it, but still gave you a sort of feeling of security.
That was your anti-aircraft armament.
That was your anti-aircraft armament, the Remington rifle.
Yes. Any other sort of aids of any kind, bombing sites or anything like that?
No. Yeah. No. Nope.
Were all of the flights then completely uneventful?
No. You see, the trouble in those days was always the engine. It wasn't a question usually of whether the engine was going to fail, but it was a question of when it was going to fail. Usually, you might drop the odd cylinder or so, but you got home. But occasionally, it did go right out on you. I remember one most unpleasant occasion when my engine went completely out on me, not very far from Dunkirk, fortunately, but it was far enough out, and it was pretty rough. We came down, landed all right, but the wingtip floats got broken. And, of course, she, being a biplane, she started heeling over and then shipping water over the bottom plane. Of course, the only way to correct that was for whoever happened to be on the other side to run out on the other plane, pull it up with simply their weight. And then, of course, before it went down, you nip back again. And I and my mechanic carried on that caper for about a couple of hours on one occasion until we picked up a French destroyer, taken in tow.
Now, your second operational posting was to Mesopotamia. How did that come about?
Well, I think it was considered possible that the Turks might cut the banks of the river, the Tigris, and flood the country. And if they'd done so, then, of course, ordinary aircraft, ordinary aeroplanes would have been useless. So somebody thought it would be a good thing to send out a squadron of seaplanes in case. And Lieutenant Commander Bohill was given the job of forming the squadron and taking it out. And I got orders to report to him at the Admiralty, and which I did. And in due course, we set off from Devonport.
What kind of squadron had been put together?
Well, we had, let's think now, we had, I think, about 6 short seaplanes and 1 Henry Farman land plane and about 6 pilots. An engineer officer,
I see, and this
and one or two, yes. It may have been 1 or 2 more, I can't remember.
Yes. When you arrived in Mesopotamia, where were you first placed?
Oh, Basra. Yes. Opposite Basra. Yes. On the other, on the left hand bank of the river. We were at a disused Turkish hospital right opposite Basra.
What kind of impression did Basra make on you?
Oh, very indifferent. Can't put it higher than that.
Yes.
It was beastly hot, and there wasn't a speck of ice in the country, and it was a loathsome country.
So you had to drink your whiskey warm.
Oh, for goodness sake, yes. I think you did.
The Basra was quite a big base, wasn't it?
Well, I believe it was.
Wasn't it when you went there?
Well, yes, I suppose so, but as far as we were concerned, we always stayed at this blessed Turkish hospital, and we kept ourselves pretty much to ourselves. We were guarded at night by Indian troops of one sort or another, and these chaps used to arrive.
Yes. Now, when you'd assembled your aircraft and begun to test them, did they all work quite efficiently under the conditions in Mesopotamia?
Oh yes. We did make our own propellers.
Why was that?
Well, the atmosphere there is a good deal pretty rarefied, and the ordinary standard propeller gave 2 higher revs, and Commander Bohill had thought of this before and had very astutely taken out a lot of laminations with us, wooden laminations, and we made our own propellers. We had some very good craftsmen too, good carpenters and riggers and engineers and people.
Now, at this time when you arrived in Mesopotamia, the siege of Kut was underway, and you had moved up to Sheikh Saad to be operational in that siege. Can you tell me about Sheikh Saad, what the setup was there?
Well, we were really under canvas on the banks. It was the banks of the Tigris. Of course, the seaplanes, we had to fly them off the Tigris, and they were merely moored up against the bank at night, or when they weren't flying them. We had an old iron barge, which was known locally as the Iron Duke. It had a wooden deck, and it had some cabins down below.
And you used those billets?
One or two officers slept in there. The CO did. Lieutenant Commander Bohill. He slept there, and
Gordon?
I don't know where Gordon slept. I don't think he did sleep there. I don't know where he was.
Okay.
I don't know where he was. But there was also a squadron of RFC up there.
Yes. You were operating off the Tigris. Now, did this present any new situations or new problems for you as seaplane pilots?
Well, it's an awful job getting the aircraft off the river, because you see, it's a fairly fast flowing thing, and depended how the wind was. If the wind was downstream, so to speak, you've got the river to contend with to get your aircraft up on its float. You see, before you can get a seaplane off, you've got to get a hydroplaning. And when we were doing this food dropping stunt into Kut, we were carrying, I think I'm right in saying, 3 four 80-pound sacks of ghee or attar or rye or whatever it was, which were slung on the bomb rack underneath, slung under with a sort of belly band contraption, and very crude, which we'd made up ourselves out there, of course, canvas, bit of canvas about a couple of feet wide, these sacks were put lengthwise, and the canvas underneath it, and merely a loop, eye loop, you see, on one side, and two loops there, and a pin that pulled out. It was very crude, but it worked.
Yes.
And but with this load on, which was quite a load for the old shorts, it was a job to get them unstuck. And then, having got them unstuck, one had to go over. We were not supposed to fly over Kut under 6,000. Because, of course, the Turks had got guns sitting both sides and waiting for you. They were unfortunate, extremely bad shots, and they never hit anybody. But still, you could bump them, you know, you'd feel as if they were going to. But it was a job. And also getting up to your height. Six, it would take you an hour and 40 minutes easily. And you'd get up, and then all of a sudden you get a bump and fetch you down a few hundred feet, and you've got to start all over again.
Could you describe for me your routine when you were dropping food supplies on Kut during the siege?
Well, we tried to do two trips a day, morning and evening. And really, it was too hot in the middle of the day. Even for us, but we did it morning and evening, and I can't, of course, at this all these years afterwards remember how many we did, but we kept at it quite hard for quite a time.
Yes. Was it a fairly straightforward business, actually? You've already described the problems of actually getting to your height. Having achieved that, was the rest of the run fairly straightforward?
Oh, yes. They shot at you, of course, as you were going over, but they were pretty bad shots, and they were nearly always low.
Yes.
Fortunately.
Now, at once...
We never lost any aircraft from anti-aircraft guns. We did lose one from... aircraft. They imported a Fokker quite early on, just soon after we started there. And this wretched thing had a gun firing ahead through the propeller. Mm. And it very deadly it was, too. It shot down a friend of mine and killed his observer, and didn't kill him, but he was badly messed up and taken a prisoner and so on, and I subsequently saw him years later.
Yes. Were the drops into Kut pretty accurate?
Well, I'm told they were.
What were your impressions at the time?
Well, one hoped they were going down all right. We had all this food in double sacks, and funnily enough, since I've retired and came here to Richmond, I have done a job as a voluntary visitor at a home for old retired officers up at the top of Roehampton Lane, Sio House. And when I started doing this about 5 years ago, there was an officer there. He was Lieutenant Colonel Dunn, and he had been Townsend's brigade major in Kut. So I asked him what the result was, and he was thrilled to the bits because he had been responsible for collecting this food after we dropped it. And I said, weren't all the sacks broken? He said, yes, they were, a good many of them, but he said a bit of sand got in, but we got most of it out, and the troops ate it all right, and he reckoned that we'd done pretty well.